What a rousing round of applause, I tell you. Man. And well-deserved, might I add. All right. Hi, everybody. My name is Rob Mason. I'm an alcoholic. By the grace of God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the Program of Recovery I found in this book. I've not found it necessary to take a drink since the 7th of July, 1988. For that, I am extremely grateful. It is good to be back here. I, too, hope everyone had a pleasant Easter. One of the guys that I sponsor came last Sunday, and obviously he doesn't call me enough, or he would have known we weren't meeting last Sunday. But that's okay. That's okay. Got to be used as a learning lesson on how often to call your sponsor. We're going to start tonight, or today, on page 28. Just for a second, we're going to hit one thing on 28 that I think is important. And while we're doing that, while we're turning there, I'm going to start this week like we have every week but one where I forgot it, with doing the set-aside prayer. So if everybody would join me in a moment of silence, we'll share a prayer. Lord, help me to set aside everything I think I know about you, everything I think I know about myself, everything I think I know about my fellows, and everything I think I know about my own recovery. All for a new experience in you, Lord. A new experience in myself, a new experience in my fellows, and a much needed new experience in my own recovery. Amen. Thank you. All right, page 28. You know, we did the third step, and it's been 2 weeks, so I just want to kind of just take one quick second to just kind of recap for those who weren't here last week or 2 weeks ago. We made this decision in step three. And really, that's what the book says it is. The book says that the third step is a decision. It is a decision to turn my will and my life over to God. And as I shared 2 weeks ago, that decision, the whole purpose of the AA program, is to turn my will and my life over to God's care. That's the whole purpose of the 12 steps, really. Okay? Everything we do here is designed in one fashion or another to move me, the almighty me, out of the center of my own life and allow me to turn my will and my life over to God's care through a series of actions. Step three is where I make a decision to do that. One of the biggest mistakes I see in AA, and I see it all the time, is you go to a meeting, and I'm sure some of you have seen this, and you'll see somebody sitting there and you'll say, well, what are you doing? Well, I'm turning it over. You see them 3 months later, what are you doing? I'm still turning it over, right? And they're not getting it because they haven't done anything, right? The old analogy of the three frogs sitting on the log and one of them decides to jump off, and how many are still there? Well, the answer is three, because they haven't done anything. One just made a decision to jump off. And incidentally, if you look at the third step prayer, which we don't have to look at right now, but if you look at it, it's interesting that there is no amen at the end of the third step prayer. And somebody once asked me, well, why is that? Okay? And here's what I believe. Okay? I believe that there's no amen at the end of the third step prayer because until we get through to step seven, and at the end of the seventh step prayer it says amen. I believe we are in a prayerful state, okay, through step four, step five, and step six, okay? So if you believe the old analogy that if there's three frogs sitting on a log and one decides to jump off and there are still three there, you know when you hear the splash? In step seven. That's when you hear the splash, when you've taken the action to jump off that log. Does that make sense to everybody? All right. So I've made this decision. What, though, causes a guy like me, what could bring a lying, cheating, manipulating, not a very nice guy, quite honestly, guy like me, to come to the table to write down what looks to me, look, I know what it says. I know what it says in step four. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory. But I know what that means. That means I got to write down a long list of all this stuff I've done. That's what I thought it meant, right? That's what I believed that it meant, right? There's only one thing that makes me willing to do that, right? And it says right here on page 28, first paragraph, we, in our turn, sought the same escape with the desperation of drowning men, right? You see, this is what causes a guy like me to be willing to do the things that the steps ask me to do, okay, is the desperation and the suffering of active alcoholism, okay? Because although I've made a decision in step three, the book is going to tell me that despite my intentions, despite my desire, despite desperate need, I am still blocked off from God. On page 64, actually we're going to start on 63. And I'm going to retain this note for later. I'll put myself a note here. On page 63, if you look at those last two lines and jump up one sentence, it says, though if honestly and humbly made, everybody with me? 63, last two lines, jump up one more line. Though if honestly and humbly made, an effect sometimes a great one was felt at once, right? Now, I did a third step prayer with somebody this week. I always insist that the men that I sponsor and the women that I sponsor, that I actually do the third step prayer with them, okay? It's a powerful thing to do with someone else. And the book tells us that it's best to do these steps with someone else, okay? And I found that to be true for me, okay? It also makes sure I know that they did it, okay? And they know that they did it. And we both know that they did it, right? There's no question whether or not they did it, right? And then I'll often ask them, well, how do you feel? Sometimes I'll wait a day and say, how do you feel? And sometimes they say that they had a great effect. And the book says sometimes we had this great effect, okay? How many people here who've done the steps that had a great effect after step three? Anyone? A couple people, a few people. And that is the case for some people, okay? It was not the case for me, okay? I did not have this great revelation, this great burning bush experience when I did step three, okay? For me, that great effect happened after step five, okay? And it's different for everybody. But the point is, as I said a few weeks ago, is that somewhere in this process, my spirit became awakened. And that has been true for everyone I've taken through the steps. It goes on to say, and this is why I'm starting here, next. Everybody circle that word. What does next mean? Following immediately. That's what next means. Look it up in the dictionary. Following immediately, okay? So that sounds to me like a timetable, doesn't it to you? Okay, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Now, I don't know about any of you, but I had never attempted a personal house cleaning before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, I had attempted your personal house cleaning on many occasions, but I had never bothered to do one on myself. Okay? It goes on to say, though our decision, again referring to step three as a decision, though our decision in step three was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless when? At once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. It says our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to the causes and the conditions. So, it gives us two timetables in that first paragraph on when we should do step four. You can either do it next, or you can do it at once. Or anywhere in between is fine with me.
How about
never? Never. That's right. Exactly. No, that's not it, Kev. Sorry. And it says in here that the whole purpose of step four is that I have to face and be rid of the things that are blocking me. So although I've taken a third step, although I've made a decision, the book is very clear that I am still blocked off from God. It's also very clear that our decision is going to have little permanent effect. What does that mean? It means that the first three steps do not contain enough power for a guy of my description to keep me permanently sober. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. And as I shared 2 weeks ago, that's why a lot of times we get the 1-2-3 waltz, right? Everybody knows what that is, right? It's where you go 1-2-3 drink. 1-2-3 drink. 1-2-3 drink. And people go through that year after year after year. Why? Because they get this effect after they take step three. And they think, I got it made. I got it made. I'm home free. Right? But they've never gotten down to the causes and the conditions of their drinking. So as a result, they end up... Sorry, my book just fell apart. As a result, they sit there, they feel a little bit better, they start to get well, right? They almost get a little too well. Right? And we've all been there, right? I remember my first 4 or 5 attempts at sobriety. I would go through, I'd start going to the meetings, I'd get a little time under my belt, start sleeping better, start eating better, start working out a little bit, right? And I'd start feeling pretty good. And I'd look up there and I'd say, why do I want to do that? right? That looks like a lot of work. That doesn't look very pleasant, right? And so I wouldn't do it, right? And eventually, the newness would wear off, a couple days, maybe sometimes a couple weeks, right? And then I'd get a great idea, right? And the great idea was, I'm sure this time I can handle it. Now that I've been around AA people, right? I'm sure I can handle it, right? But if we don't get on with step four, the book says, the immediate effect of step three begins to wear off. And pretty soon, what happens is self-will comes back, and it starts to say, you don't need to do all that work, right? You don't need to do all that work, right? So what do? We procrastinate. And alcoholics, let me tell you something, alcoholics are the best procrastinators in the world, aren't we, right? So we put it off, right? But things are getting a little bit better, right? But the book says we haven't gotten down to what? The causes and the conditions of our drinking, right? And it tells me right here that my liquor is but a symptom, okay? And a symptom is a sign of something else, right? Now, I've been to 4 treatment centers, okay? And every time I went to treatment, they told me the same thing. They said, Rob, you're screwed up because you drink too much. And if you'd stop drinking so much, you wouldn't be so screwed up, right? And so I'd stop drinking because I'm checked into a 28-day treatment center, right? So I wouldn't be so screwed up. And I'd get about 2 weeks sober. And let me tell you something. I would get really, really screwed up, right? And if you understand that, okay, then you understand what it's like to suffer from alcoholism sober, right? You see, because I don't get happy, joyous, and free. I get restless, irritable, and discontent, the book says. So I have to get down to the causes and the conditions of what makes me alcoholic in the first place. Why is it that I have to drink just to stand reality, right? Because remember, we're not just looking for a way to be physically sober. We're looking for a way where we not only are sober, but a way that we never have to get thirsty, right? And let me tell you, I've been sober a long time, and not only have I not had to drink, but I've never gotten thirsty for alcohol since I did these steps, right? And that's what the 4-step is about to do, okay? And now he's going to start talking about the inventory. He says, therefore, because we have to get down to the causes and conditions, we started on a personal inventory. This was step 4. All right, now, some people will tell you that step 4 is the writing step. Anybody heard that? Step 4 is the writing step? I don't believe that. I believe step 4 is a series of observations, directions, and prayers. And there's writing involved. Okay? There's a difference. Okay? There's writing involved. But step 4 is full of observations, directions, and prayers. And I must do exactly what the book says to get the outcome that the book is talking about. Now, there are several reasons for the... How many people here, first of all, have not done a 4-step? Have never done a 4-step? Okay. Well, I've got some good news and some bad news for you. The good news is you're going to find out today. Okay? The bad news is you'll never again be able to say you didn't do it because you didn't know how to do it. Okay? And that's one of the reasons people don't do step 4. People don't do step 4 because they don't know how to do it. Because no one has taken the time to sit down with them and say, this is how you do the 4-step in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what we're going to do today. And if you're out there sponsoring people, okay, how many people here are sponsoring people? Okay, it's equally important that you know how to explain the 4-step to the person that you are sponsoring. Okay, it was pointed out to me many, many years ago that if I cannot effectively carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, then I am doing a disservice to the people that I'm working with. Okay? That I'm actually harming them, even though I'm trying to be helpful. Okay? So we're going to go over that tonight. I think one of the reasons people procrastinate on step 4 is old-timers scare them to death. Really, I think that. I remember I went to a meeting back in the early 80s. This was before I ever got sober, and the subject was step 4. And this old-timer said, yeah, I remember step 4. It just about killed me. And I thought, I don't want to do that, right? I don't want to do that, right? And I'm here to tell you that's not what step 4 in my book says, okay? What step 4 says in my book is that I must use this step to obtain freedom, okay? That I'm going to get a chance to look at those things, to uncover, discover, and discard them, as Chuck C. used to say, okay? I think another reason that people procrastinate on step 4 is because people in the fellowship say things like, Don't rush through the steps. Take your time, right? There's no hurry. What's the hurry, right? You know, interestingly, I think people sometimes wait. One of the things I hear a lot is, you know, you should, one of the things I've heard in the past, and I'm sure some of you heard, you should wait 2 years to do the fourth step, right? Because it's too painful. Anybody here heard that kind of stuff before, right? You should wait a period of time, okay? That makes about as much sense, follow me here, as waiting till you get well to go see the doctor, right? People who are well don't go see the doctor. People who are sick go see the doctor, okay? So if you feel like crap, okay, there's probably a good reason for it, because you've got all this stuff, and you know what? I watch people all the time. They're sitting there holding on to all this guilt, and all this anger, and all this fear, and all this remorse, and all this guilt, and they're just hanging on, right? And you try to stay sober hanging on to all that stuff, right? And that's why it's so important to get through this fourth step and get rid of that stuff early, early on. And I'll tell you, I'm grateful my sponsor did that for me. I do not think I would have been able to stay sober hanging on to all that stuff, right? Don't think I would have, okay? There's no surprises in step four. Here's a little news flash for you. If you're out there sitting there saying, geez, you know, I don't want to write down all this stuff I did. You already know it, okay? There's no surprises, okay? God already knows it, okay? And what you'll find out once you go to make your amends is a lot of times those things that you thought you were the only one that knew about them, okay? Other people know about them, okay? They know a lot of that stuff, okay? So there's no surprises in step four, okay? I hear people say, well, I don't know what to write down. I've never yet met an alcoholic who didn't know what he was pissed off about, what he was afraid of, and who he screwed over, okay? Never yet, okay? We all know that stuff, okay? It's just convenient to say, I don't know what to write down on my inventory, okay? Again, we're procrastinators, right? Now, Bill loves to use examples. He's already used the example of the great ocean liner. Remember that on page 17? And he's already used the example of the actor who wants to run the whole show. Now he's going to start to paint the picture of this business, okay? This business that has to take an inventory. And when we're done, he's going to say, now I want you to do exactly the same thing with your life. Let's see what he says here. He says, therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding, which is another word for searching, and fact-facing, which is another word for fearless, process. It is an effort to discover the truth. Everybody underline that. That's what the fourth step is all about. That's what moral means. The truth about the right and wrong of any given situation. That's what moral means. Okay? About the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods and to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of a business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. Now, if I own a business, I have to know what I have in stock, don't I? How many people here work in an industry where they take a regular inventory? Okay? A regular inventory. I take a regular inventory monthly, okay, in my business. Some companies do it biannually. Some companies do it annually. But the whole point is that I have to take a regular inventory. Everybody circle that word regular. It gets looked over very frequently, okay? I've heard some people say, and I will not disagree with them. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, okay? My book says a regular inventory. What does that mean? It means I'm not only going to do it once, does it? Right? It means I have to do it more than one time, okay? I take an inventory about once every year to year and a half, whether I need it or not, okay? And the reason I say whether I need it or not is because usually I think I don't need it, okay? Usually I think I don't need it, but more often than not, I do, okay? So I do it whether I think I need it or not, okay? And if you don't, you ought to think about it. Now, there are some people that will say, you do one inventory, you keep it clean in 10, okay? I do not agree with that. Because step 10 tells me that at the end of the day, I look back on the 24 hours just passed, okay? If it's 24 hours just passed, it's 10-step work. If it's something that happened 3 months ago that I'm still pissed off about, it's 4-step work. Does that make sense, everybody? Okay. And there are times when I have to do spring cleaning and go back into my business and clean off the shelves. Now, if I own this business, as I said, I have to know what I have in stock. I have to know what's damaged and unsaleable. I have to know what's taking up valuable space on my shelf that isn't of any value, don't I? Right? And I think it's safe to say that if I owned a business and I didn't do that, eventually I would go broke, wouldn't I? Right? Well, Bill's going to tell us that exactly the same thing is true about our lives. See, our business here is living sober. Right? That's the business. It's the most important business there is, as far as I'm concerned. Right? And if I don't see what's damaged and unsaleable in here, if I don't see what's taking up valuable space in my life, if I don't see what's in my life that shouldn't be there, eventually I'm going to go broke too, won't I? Right? And for me, going broke simply means I'm going to end up drunk. Okay? So this is a very important process for me. It goes on to say, we did exactly the same things with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which had caused our failure, being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, is what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations. Everybody underline common manifestations. We're going to talk about that for a second. There are some common manifestations of self, which you will see in any active alcoholic. Pull the next newcomer you see aside and talk to them for 15 minutes, okay? A person who's living their life on self-will will demonstrate three primary traits. Number one, they're pissed off at everyone, right? I was. Everyone, when I started writing my resentment list, I had a stunning realization that everyone that I had interacted with for more than 15 minutes was on my list. Right? And it's going to tell me why when we get to a couple paragraphs down, okay? Number two, people who are living on self-will are full of fear. Right? And I was full of fear. I was driven, book says I'm driven by 100 forms of fear. Right? And the third characteristic that they're going to demonstrate, and I work with a guy who doesn't know it, but he's an active alcoholic. And he's full of guilt and remorse about being a poor father, about being a poor son, about the things that he's done and the waste he's made of his life, right? And those are what we're going to look at in our inventory. We're going to look at our resentments. We're going to look at our fears. And we're going to look at the harms and hurts that we've done to other people, which have led me to guilt and remorse and shame, okay? Including my sexual conduct, okay? Which we'll talk about in the second half of the half hour, okay? Now, if I am dominated and I am consumed with resentment, and I am dominated and consumed with fear, and I am dominated and consumed with the guilt and remorse about the things that I've done, then God's not directing my life, okay? Those things are directing my life. And I can tell you, I remember for a long time in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous before I took these 12 steps, that my life was dominated by those things and I didn't even realize it, right? Because I couldn't get past those things. I couldn't get past the people that had harmed me. I couldn't get past the things that I was afraid of. I couldn't get beyond all of those things that I had done. And I was one of those guys that I had done some pretty bad stuff. Right? I had done some pretty bad... I had done stuff that was so bad that I couldn't even think about it. And anytime I would think about it, I would have to like go, oh, and I'd have to think of something else. You know what I mean? It was just... It was torturous for me. You know? And that's why I drank. Okay? And it's going to talk about that in our book. Okay? All right. Now he's going to start giving us some directions on how to take this inventory. He says here, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Everybody underline that. Resentment is the number one offender. Resentment, a definition of anytime you put the affix R-E in front of something, it means again, and then the Latin word sentire, which means to feel. So to feel again is what resentment means. Okay? In common English, it has been come to be associated with the feelings of anger or negative feelings, okay? But the literal translation is to feel again, okay? If you rebuild, you build again. If you redo, you do again. Yes, ma'am? Moral, the truth about the right and wrong of any given situation. Vanna White, where's Vanna White? Where's Vanna White? There he is. He's going to be handing out a little handout here in a little while, and there are some. Isn't he lovely? Give him a hand, huh? All right. You never looked so good, Vanna. All right. Anyway, he's going to be giving out a handout, and there are some definitions in there. Okay, there's a definitions page of some words that appear in the four steps, so moral is one of those words. Okay? All right. What was I thinking here? Resentment. Thank you very much. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. The only place that the word disease appears in our book. Doesn't say we have a physical disease, because they did not know that in 1939. It says we have a spiritual disease. The 12 by 12 calls it a soul sickness. It means the same thing. Soul sickness, right? In other words, my spirit is at dis-ease. Okay? And as I said in many different ways throughout the first 6 weeks of this workshop, is that, you know, it's interesting that we don't attack alcohol in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? We don't run dry out farms, right? I mean, if that was the key, then we'd just run a bunch of dry out farms, we'd run a bunch of 30-day treatment centers, we'd detox people from alcohol, we'd turn them loose, right? But our book doesn't say that anywhere in here, right? It doesn't anywhere in here say, okay, today's the day, quit drinking, does it, right? Look for it, okay? It doesn't say that. What it says is we attack the spiritual malady, the spiritual disease, right? And when my spiritual malady is overcome, the book says, I straighten out mentally and physically. My obsession disappears. I no longer find it necessary to take the drink, right? Isn't it interesting how that works, right? It says, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady, step three, is overcome, we straighten out mentally, step two, and physically, step one. What does that mean? It means that when I turn my will and my life over in step three, as a result of this course of action that we're getting into now, right? The insanity mentioned in step two disappears, and therefore I no longer drink and I am no longer powerless over alcohol in step one because the physical craving never occurs. What we're going to see when we get over onto page 66 is I relapse exactly in reverse. So we recover, step one, step two, step three. We relapse, step three, step two, step one. And I'll show you why I believe that. Okay? And now it's going to give us our first clear-cut direction on how to take a personal inventory. Right here at the bottom of 64. It says, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. And so that's the first direction right there. I don't care what kind of paper you, toilet paper, typing paper, binder paper, notebook, okay? Anything you want, okay? We set them on paper. It says we listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. And then notice right after the word angry, there's a little dot. Everybody see that little dot right there? Okay, that's called a period, okay? And it means end of one thought, beginning of a new thought, right? So we stop right there, okay? Because we're going to do the first direction before we do anything else. Now, Vanna's going to hand out the visual aids here. Vanna, please. Thank you. And you could take some and pass them around to expedite this quickly here. Kevin will help you. And if everybody, when you get your visual aid, we'll do the following. I'm going to see if I can prop this up a little bit better here so my book doesn't fall apart. Well, I have a minute here. No, I'm okay. I think. I got to get this rebound. That's the problem. No. Here, let me see. Thanks. There you go. No, that's good. That's good. Thank you, Kevin. All right. If everybody will take their visual aid and turn to the page called the Review of Resentment, which looks like this. Everybody have one? No? Kev, did I not make enough copies? Wait a minute. There's still some going around. I am really sorry if I did not make enough. If anybody already has one, I will bring some more.
I don't need it.
Kevin's got plenty. I will be happy to bring more. I apologize. I thought 45 was going to be enough, so I'm sorry about that. Make sure the new people get them, you old-timers. I'll bring you some, okay? I'll bring more next week. I have an extra one here, too. I'll give to somebody, so. Okay?
Here you go.
I might have some more. Here, this young lady right here needs one. All right. Sorry, guys, I'll bring you some more. All right, if everybody will turn to the page called Review of Resentments. Review of Resentments. Let me see here. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to take your page like this and fold it where all you can see is the first three columns, just like that. Everybody see that? Let me rip this one. The first three columns, just like that. Okay? Everybody see that? Just like that. Where you can see the first three columns. Okay? Now, if you do this, what you will have, if you look in your book on page 65, okay, is the blank version of the example given on page 65. You'll notice on the example on page 65, it says, I'm resentful at the cause and affects my. Everybody see that? Okay. And on our handout, it says, I'm resentful at the cause and affects my. Okay. Exactly what's in the book. Okay. Now, back on page 64, it says, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we are angry, right? On our handout, it says, I am resentful at. I list people, institutions, or principles with whom I am angry. Okay, now why am I going over this? Okay, because I am not trying to bring in a new fourth step here. Okay, as a matter of fact, nowhere in our book does it say, get a Hazelden guide and write your fourth step. Okay, that is not the purpose of this handout. The purpose of this handout is to put every single direction in the fourth step that's in the big book in the blank format on this handout. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay, there's nothing more and there's nothing less. Okay? So, the first thing we do, and we're going to look at our handout here, and we're going to look at the example Bill gives on page 65. Because the first direction is we list people, institutions, or principles with whom we are angry. Bill says in his example on 65, he's resentful at the following. Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, his employer, and his wife. Okay, so we write our inventory this way, top to bottom. We don't write it this way. Okay, we list every person, place, institution, like the IRS, the police, the courts, okay, etc., okay, or institutions, okay, the government, the police, okay, that we're at, the church, that we're angry at first. Okay, so what the first thing you're going to do, okay, when you get a hold of this, and if you haven't written on it, don't, and here's why, because the first thing you're going to do is you're going to make yourself a master copy, okay, because you're going to need this for the people you're going to sponsor, okay, you're going to put that in a drawer somewhere, and then, if you've got to write an inventory, you're going to make about 10 sheets of this I'm resentful at sheet, okay, because most alcoholics that I know have more than one sheet of resentment, okay. And you're going to make about 10 of fear and about 10 of sex conduct, and you're going to staple it all back together, then you're going to start your inventory, okay? So, the book says, look at the bottom of page 65 there, because one of the questions I get asked a lot is, well, how do I exactly write this inventory? Notice what it says right after the example. It says, we went back through our lives. Everybody see that? Okay? So what does that mean? It means I don't start from the beginning of my life and go forward and think about the people I'm resentful at. It means I start from today. Okay, am I pissed off at anybody today? No. Was I pissed off at anybody yesterday? How about last week? How about last month? How about last year? How about the year before that? Okay, and we go back chronologically through our life, and we see if there's anyone we were resentful at, and we put them on our list. Now, a question I get asked a lot is, well, let's say Jimmy Smith pushed me off the swing when I was 7 years old, and I was really mad, okay? Should I put him on the list? And the answer is this. If you're still pissed off at Jimmy Smith, and every time you see a cantaloupe in the grocery store, you say, man, it looks just like his head, and if I see that guy, then you put it down. Okay? If you say, you know what, it's not that big of a thing, you know, I've forgiven him a long time ago, then you don't need to put it on the list. These are only resentments that you have today, not resentments you may have had in the past. The rule of thumb, however, is when in doubt, write it out. When in doubt, write it out. Okay? It's like cancer. It's not the part you get that'll kill you. It's the part you miss that'll kill you. Okay? So I always encourage the guys I sponsor, if you're not sure, put it down, better safe than sorry. Right? Okay. So, after we've listed all the people that we can think of in column one, we go to the next direction. And in the book it says, we ask ourselves why we were angry. That's the second. Then there's another one of those funny little dots called a period. End of thought. Right? And column two on our handout says, I ask myself why I am angry. What did they do to cause me to be angry, right? Well, let's look at Bill's example again. He's angry at Mr. Brown because of his attention to his wife. I can see that, okay. Told the wife of his mistress, and Brown may get the job at the office. Okay, everybody see that on page 65? Okay. Anybody who hasn't been to this workshop want to tell me how many words you used to do that? 19 words, right? I give my guys 20, okay? In other words, this doesn't have to be a long 5-page thing about what a dirty SOB Brown was, okay? It's very short and concise, just so that when you go to do your fifth step, you know what you can reference back to what you're talking about. But it's very short, okay? He's resentful at Mrs. Jones because she's a nut, she snubbed me, she committed her husband for drinking, he's my friend, and she's a gossip. He's resentful at the employer because he's unreasonable and unjust, he's overbearing, and he threatens to fire me for drinking and for padding my expense account. Now that is unreasonable, you know what I mean? That is a little unreasonable if you ask me, right? And then he's resentful at his wife because she misunderstands and nags. She likes Brown and wants the house put in her name. And guys, let me tell you something. If the wife wants the house put in her name, you're in trouble, okay? That's all I'm going to say, okay? So that's what Bill would have in column 2 right here, right? What he put right here on the second column on page 65. Last two lines on page 64, it says, in most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal or relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relationships, which had been hurt, threatened, or interfered with? Okay? So column 3 on our handout says, on my grudge list, I set opposite each name my injuries. Was it my self-esteem, my security, my ambitions, my personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? So this is a 5-question multiple choice. Okay? 5-question multiple choice. What part of self was affected, hurt, or threatened by that person? Okay? So back to Bill's example here on 65, he says that his resentment towards Mr. Brown affects his sex relations and his self-esteem regarding his attention to his wife. His sex relations and his self-esteem regarding his wife telling him about about the mistress. And his security and self-esteem regarding his job at the office. Regarding Mrs. Jones, it affects his personal relationships and his self-esteem. Regarding the employer, his self-esteem and his security. And regarding his wife, his pride, his personal or sex relations, and his security, okay? So that's what Bill would put in column 3. Everybody understand this so far? Pretty self-explanatory, right? Okay. It goes on to say at the bottom of 65, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. Let's stop right there. Nothing counts but thoroughness and honesty, okay? The fourth step is designed, if we do exactly as it's outlined in the big book, to bring us to certain conclusions, okay? If we do some other format, we may or may not come to those conclusions, okay? And the whole purpose for following this, well, here's the best reason for doing it this format. Once you're done with this, you'll have all the information you need to do step 5, step 6, step 7, step 8, step 9, and I have my guy start step 10 right on the back, okay? If you do some other format, you may or may not get all of the information that the fourth step is designed to bring us to. Now, why am I mentioning that at this point? Because what you see in the example on page 65 is only 60% of the process that's outlined in the book. Okay? Now, why Bill chose to only put the first 3 columns of a 5-column inventory in the example on page 65, I have no idea. Okay? I can't answer that question. Okay? But we're not going to get the direction on the last 2 columns until we get over onto page 66 and 67, okay? Now, if I don't do columns 4 and 5, what we're going to see is I don't find out the causes and the conditions of my drinking. That's where we're going to find out that information. Thus far, when I was in the inventory process, my first one, I had not learned anything yet. Okay? I knew who they were that I was resentful at. I sure knew what they did. I had some idea about what part of me was affected by this, okay? But that was as far as I'd ever gotten. And on the top of page 66, it's going to tell me that. It says, when we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world, that's the people and the institutions, and its people, were often quite wrong. That's column two. That's what they did, right? They were quite wrong. It says to conclude that others, column one, were wrong, column two, was as far as most of us ever got, right? And I don't know about anybody else here. That's as far as I needed to get, right? You're wrong. I'm right. That's as far as I needed to get, right? Anybody here relate to that? Yeah, I thought so, right? It says the usual outcome was that people, column one, continued to wrong us, column two, and we stayed sore, column three. Okay? Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. You know, it's clear. You know, when I read this the first time, I realized something that had been obvious to me all my life. You know, I concluded that you were wrong. You hurt me, right? You see, I was the victim, right? And that's how I come into the fourth step. You see, I come into the fourth step as the victim of the wrongs that, I mean, look at poor Bill. I mean, you know, Mr. Brown is showing attention to his wife, told the wife about his mistress. Brown's going to try to get his job at the office. I mean, you know, how dare Brown do that stuff to Bill, you know? He's upset with, the wife wants the house put in her name, you know? I mean, I can see why Bill's upset about this stuff, right? His employer is unreasonable and unjust. I mean, he wants to fire him for padding his expense account. I mean, what a jerk, you know? I mean, it's clear to me that Bill is the victim here, right? And that's how we approach step four, okay? That's how we approach. That's how we walk in the door to step four, right? And I write down all these people that I'm pissed off about, right? It goes on to say on page 66, But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. You know, one of the things that I have a propensity for, and we'll talk about it here at the bottom of the page, is for building cases against people, right? It goes on to say, it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these. Everybody underline that. We permit these. Right? And that was always true for me. You know? You see, the first time that you did it to me. And every time after that, I did it to myself. But the beauty of a resentment is I still get to blame you. Every single time I relive it in my mind. Right? It goes on to say, but the alcoholic whose hope, and here's the hope, if you want some hope, here it is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. So if you want that spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We have found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, listen to this carefully, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Okay? When I harbor resentment, I shut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Right? When I'm in fear, I shut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. When I'm in guilt and remorse about the things that I've done, I shut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And then what happens? It goes on to say, the insanity of alcohol returns, step two, and we drink again, step one. And with us, to drink is to die. So you remember I said we recover, step one, step two, step three? Okay? And right here, it's very clear that we relapse exactly in reverse, right? I shut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit, step three, right? I relapse spiritually first. Then the insanity of alcohol returns in step two. Then I drink again in step one, right?